sir. All right, good morning, everybody. I am Mark Kyrus. In my day job, I work for the Joint Functional Component Command for Integrated Missile Defense, a organization that has more letters in its title than people, but working for the United States Space Command. By background, I started hobby wargaming, miniatures, board games, RPGs at age 12 and have been and still continue to do so even today. I am a retired Army officer, 24 years in the U.S. Army, and 20 years as a Air Force civilian. Following that, just retired from that. And during that time, I was, for 19 of those 20 years, I was the chief of policy at United States Strategic Command in Omaha. Okay. One of the additional duties that I picked up while I was chief of policy was missile defense policy, and United States Strategic Command, which had the global missile defense mission at the time, was the sponsor for a war game known as Nimble Titan. And I'm going to talk today about Nimble Titan. Somehow I fell into the job of being the war game control group director in 2009, and I never was able to wipe that sticky booger off. I have been the war game control group director, you know, up till today. Mission transferred from Strategic Command to Space Command 2 years ago, and I transferred with them. All right, so that's kind of the who I am piece of this. What is Nimble Titan? Nimble Titan is, for lack of a better term, a campaign of campaigns, and each of those campaigns has a series of events within them. It is not a single, you know, year-long, do-it-once kind of war game. It's a succession of games. It focuses at the strategic pole mill level. Our players, you know, are looking at that level, and we are looking principally at air and missile defense policy, capability, C2 and interoperability, those kinds of functions, okay? And ultimately, the outputs of Nimble Titan go into feed countries' political decision-making vis-a-vis air and missile defense, acquisition decisions, and so on, okay? I'd really like to focus kind of down here at this yellow box on the bottom, though, because that's the key part. We have had as many as 28 countries participating today. We have 23. And three multinational organizations, and they come from around the world. You know, a large number, of course, from Europe, just because there's a large number of countries in Europe. Five of the six Gulf Cooperation Council states from the Gulf region, Japan, Korea, South Korea, Australia, Canada, the U.S., obviously, and so on. We've been recently invited seven new states to come in from the Indo-Pacific and South American regions as well. And so what we kind of have is a very global constituency of participants. Our player base, our target audience is, in a perfect world, roughly 50% personnel from defense and 50% from foreign affairs or State Department types. And so what you get is a really good mix of military personnel who know the air and missile defense business and the state personnel that maybe understand the legal and policy implications of these things, okay? And again, we play this at the strategic pole mill level, so if you think about it as kind of like a model United Nations, except with people from the actual countries there playing themselves. And that's kind of the big picture on Nimble Titan. All right, obviously our focal point is to look at policy and operational concepts for air and missile defense, and to look at the implications of how they affect deterrence and so on. Nimble Titan is not a test bed for, okay, let's try out what you've already got in place. It is an experiment. It's a series of experimentation, and hence why it's a war game, to look at potential new things. And we play 10 years in the future, so countries are able to come in and say, hey, we've been thinking about picking up the, you know, moon-based space lasers. You know, what are the implications of moon-based space lasers if we were to go buy some? Okay, let's play it and see what it looks like, right? So people tend to kind of steer towards what they already know and then experiment a little bit on top of that. So we get a broad swath of good findings that come out as a result of that. But it is not a tactical game. You know, I in War Game Control will throw stuff in and show them the implications, but it's not intended to be that kind of an exercise or a war game. Last thing I will say about this before I leave is, since we have been doing this game for many, many years, and I'll show you the campaign history here in a moment, we got we learned really early on that what you have is an iteration, a continuous iteration of new participants that come in all the time. So why don't we write down our findings? And so we have this collective, we call it the Nimble Titan Principles Almanac. It's about 100 pages long, but it is kind of the sum of all the things that we have learned over many years that tend to be the same no matter what. And so that document itself has been worth its weight in platinum when new players come in and you say, okay, rather than recreate the wheel at the undergraduate level and relearn all the same things, start with this as kind of a baseline and let's move on to graduate level work. Okay, so that's another kind of best practice type of thing that we have done. All right, campaign history overview. I'm not doing this because I feel like teaching you history. I'm doing this because Graham asked me to kind of show you the progression of thought over the years and how Nimble Titan has organized. Nimble Titan originally started in 1998 as a joint staff, 30-minute spasm of death, throw a bunch of missiles at, you know, a bunch of Patriots on the ground somewhere, move the Patriots 6 inches to the right, shoot the same missiles at them again and see which one was better kind of game. Don't care. You know, plenty of simulation kinds of things do that. What we found was the real challenge was the multinational aspects, the political, the policy implications of working with partners and allies. So we got redirected. This joint staff game came to U.S. Strategic Command, and we initially started with a series of just only military folks coming to a game, one big game at the end of the year, kind of your traditional, you know, exercise type war game. We rapidly moved on then to say, okay, let's start doing kind of two-year cycles because that way we have time to kind of flesh things out, conduct different, you know, activities throughout that campaign. NT08 was the very first campaign where we started looking at the policy topics. And, you know, compelling but not interesting when the room is full of a whole bunch of military guys going, I think my policy is, okay. So we said, challenge. Why don't we bring in the policy players? So in 2010, we brought in folks from all the MOFA and state departments, lawyers, and so on. Of note, the 2010 campaign was kind of famous for the creation and validation in many ways of NATO's operational concept for BMD and theater missile defense that is still being used today. A bunch of Dutch and German guys got in a room somewhere, said this is what the C2 construct looks like. We ran it, it didn't work. They ran off to a dark room, whiteboarded it. Can we try this again today? That came out and went off to the Chicago and Lisbon summits and so on as the approved concept. So, it, you know, one instance of real world applicability, okay? Nimble Titan 12, we said, okay, interesting. Now let's look at this kind of from a much more situational perspective. So we looked at it by region. We said, okay, let's have a Pacific regional war game and a European regional war game. Okay? That in and of itself was interesting, but what we found was adversaries don't tend to respect our regional borders. They tend to be trans-regional. So we then created a campaign where we said, okay, we've got a Northeast Asian threat and a Southwest Asian threat country. Everybody who's interested in this bad guy, please come to our game. And we played it, you know, with multiple regions affected by the same adversaries, okay? We then kind of had an odd campaign that was very functionally based, you know, looking at topics, looking at planning, and then, okay, let's fight it out. But then what we really found was the interesting research questions tended to be almost by phase of activity. So peacetime or competition phase, crisis phase, conflict phase. So we structured the next three sets of campaigns that way. The other thing that we found was that the participant base was much more interested in doing things globally. Let's all get together. One of the benefits of Nimble Titan is that, you know, people in the Republic of Korea can learn from people in Saudi Arabia or people in Poland. You know, they shared very similar issues, they handled them differently. And so by conducting global games, what we found was everybody's in the same room and there's a lot of trans-regional sharing of information. It made it a nightmare. I'm running four adversaries at a time from war game control, trying to keep everybody gainfully employed, timing and sequencing, but it has worked pretty well. We did one game where we actually did adversaries by phase even, and if you look, there was a whole lot of execution events that we had to do in that campaign, that two-year window. So that became kind of a challenge. So where are we at today? And this is kind of getting to the best practices part that Graham wanted me to touch on. The Nimble Titan 26 campaign just started here back in January. Campaign design conference, the first design and planning workshop. Next week, we go to Stockholm and we're executing this very first event, Understanding the Environment. What we found was there were a lot of people who had research questions that were very, almost educational. You know, what are the basics of, you know, emerging threats or space support to integrated air and missile defense and, you know, and so on, missile defeat operations. So we'll have that event next week. But one of the things that we also found over time was that the countries would come in at the start of a campaign and go, here are my research questions. And then over a two-year span of time, those research questions got really stale as you were progressing from a couple, three events. Not to mention with 25, 28 countries, you're now sitting on top of something like 75 to 100 research questions that you're trying to scratch in each event. So every event was about a mile wide and an inch deep, as we would say in American English, okay? And so we kind of said, all right, we need to change that process. By the end of a two-year campaign, the original submitter of a research question couldn't even remember what it was that they wanted, right? Or had changed out two or three times, and I'm now the third guy that's the Polish national lead, you know, or whatever. And so we kind of said, all right, we need to institute a different process, you know, to do this in this campaign. So one of the things that we're doing now is instead of fixing the research questions, you know, we said, all right, we've definitely got campaign themes that everybody's initial submissions tended to aggregate into. Let's not worry about trying to create the actual event research questions until we get to the planning for that particular event, okay? So, and also, if you look at it, I mean, the war in Ukraine, the 12-day war between Israel and Iran, the Hamas thing, I mean, air and missile defense stuff is moving so fast that countries are struggling to even keep up with the challenges themselves, counter UAS, you know, and so on. So we said, all right, fine, let's keep it fresh, you know. Based on this, you come to the next event and we will generate the research questions there and build the event so that, you know, it progresses as we go along and we're not stuck with a single scenario that lasts for 2 years that's kind of outdated by the end of it. What we did decide to do this time was the second and third events will be more games. This first event is more of a seminar-ish kind of event, but looking at things through the lenses of regions, the Asia-Pacific, the Euro-Atlantic, the Middle East regions, and then followed by a global component where we bring everybody together in that same gaming environment. First one will be looking at the competition and crisis phases. Second one will go crisis through, first time ever, extended conflict. People were interested in, you know, okay, what we see is that warfare doesn't necessarily end in, you know, a week or less. So how are we doing air and missile defense over weeks, months, and years of conflict, okay? First ever, last campaign, we experimented with a classified component. With 25 countries from around the world, it's virtually impossible to do a classified event and get everybody all in one room willing to share. But what we found was we could do it at the NATO level. We could bring all the NATO countries in and do a single classified event. So again, we're looking at classified components for both of those. You can kind of see the campaign themes we've got for this upcoming campaign. All right, type of events we use in Nimble Titan. We have defined all these. You know, when you're an organization that's been around for 25 years, we have standard operating procedures and so on throughout Nimble Titan. But we've kind of categorized the types of events that we do into these five. A war game is that true war game where it's dual-sided, two or more-sided. The adversary is played by actual players that are unconstrained by war game control, and so on. The tabletop exercise, of course, is more that vignette-stimulated event. Get the players, you know, in the room, hit them with the situation, what do you do? Doesn't necessarily carry on to the next series of events, but we have found that we can artfully craft it so that it does kind of look like, you know, what you're doing, because again, you can kind of predict where the players might go. We'll do that. Limited objective experiment is one of those, okay, classic science experiments. You know, set the board, run the situation, stop. reset the board somewhat differently, run the situation, stop, and so on. We have done limited objective experiments, you know, to look at controlled variables. It doesn't work really well with 25 countries that you're trying to keep gainfully employed. You know, at best, you can kind of do it with a small subset of players, but that's about it. Seminar, of course, allows you to kind of drill down deep into a topic, but it's not really based on playing as players in a game. It's more, let's talk about this particular topic from your perspective. And what we have found is, in all things Nimble Titan, we don't ever use one of these. It's always a hybrid. You know, pieces, parts together, things as necessary. And one thing that we have found, last campaign was probably the first time in many campaigns that we actually used a true war game. Interestingly enough, because most of the research questions tended to be deliverable using kind of the tabletop exercise format. You know, it was easy to kind of set up a situation and then run it and see, you know, what's the issues here. Pure war game, you don't control the players. They're going to go where they go. So your research questions for a pure war game need to be much broader. And in Nimble Titan terms, what we found was the war game works really well for those types of research questions where you want to know whether or not the activities you're doing will have deterrent effect on an adversary or escalatory or de-escalatory, you know, impacts on an adversary, and so on. The only way you're going to learn that is by putting an adversary player in there. Otherwise, it's just the white cell telling you what you did affected, you know, deterred the adversary. You don't learn anything real that way. So the war game is a good tool for those kind of very broad topic areas. Okay. All right. Kind of bring us to the end here. The real world benefits, you know, that we've seen. Again, Nimble Titan has allowed many countries to come in and experiment with emerging concepts, emerging policy that they've been thinking about in air and missile defense, some of the emerging challenges. You know, how does a country like ours deal with, you know, small unmanned aerial systems or hypersonic weapons or, you know, you name it, right? Different cruise missiles and so on. But many countries have taken away the findings back to their country and used it to apply to their actual real-world policy. Okay, we've seen that repeatedly throughout our history. Many countries will use this as kind of a quick look idea to look at material development and material solution development. Hey, we in Sweden are thinking about getting Patriots. Why would we ever use Patriots? Well, here's the situation, you know. Okay, cool. Now I can go back to my boss and go, hey, a cruise missile attack on Gothenburg Harbor is probably a good reason to own Patriots, right? So again, you know, real-world implications for force development and material solutions, okay, for certain types of capabilities. This is the big one. This is the one nobody ever talks about, right? I have seen Japanese and Koreans who wouldn't talk to each other in public because of 50 years worth of animosity and hatred from World War II. Drinking together in the bar and passing cards to each other. Hey, call me if we have a real problem, right? That networking is amazing. And the thing is, our constituency base for most Nimble Titan events is kind of at that 06 and below or civilian equivalent level. Those folks tend to be much more experimental, much more risk tolerant when it comes to experimenting and playing. You know, we will do, as you saw in our campaign slides, we'll do a senior leader event once every campaign to kind of bring all the senior sirs in and go, this is what we've done. What are your thoughts about what we learned? You know, that's a necessary and important thing. But those guys don't experiment, right? They don't want to be seen as giving on what their national policy might really be. And so, again, it's a really good thing. Again, I talked about this. The trans-regional sharing of lessons is amazing. You see a lot of commonalities and a lot of differences in how different regions approach the same problems, okay? Common threat perceptions, anybody that's ever been worked in NATO knows that the hardest thing to do is to get everybody to agree that you've got a problem, you know? So by giving this set of situations, it facilitates the development of common threat perceptions. Emerging concepts, you know, those kinds of things. Also, globally amongst a community of practice, You know, you can start sharing terms of art, things like that, defining them situationally, and people will take that back and incorporate it into their own doctrine, their own tactics, you know, and so on. Okay. And lastly, it's a deterrent and assurance activity. We don't broadcast it as such. We don't go out there and say, hey, we're all getting together and talking about you, you know, North Korea, or, you know, whoever. But they don't miss it, you know. They see a whole lot of countries getting together that are talking about air and missile defense, and they kind of get it. And it's an assurance activity for partners and allies to kind of get together and reiterate to each other how well that they intend to work together, you know, given crisis situations. At the end of the day, I think all war games, a wise sage man once told me, all war games are designed to either teach, test, or learn. Okay? Nimble Titan has to do all three. And I think that's something we've had to juggle really hard. You know, with the turnover of personnel, you're constantly teaching new guys old stuff, but you also want to test new concepts, and you want to learn something new from them that you can take away. And so we struggle mightily, and I think we've gotten pretty good at it, to be able to set up our events so that we teach, test, and learn, you know, as best we can. All right, any questions?
Questions at the end.
Perfect. Over to you, sir.